KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 9:01, we have 37 degrees as your temperature, and we look for a high near about 45 today before things start to cool off here for the rest of the weekend into early next week as a cold front moves through. Good morning, I'm Chris Parks with a check of the latest in state and local news on KJAN. The Council Bluffs Police Department updated more information about an officer-involved shooting on Thursday morning. Council Bluffs Police Officer Trevor Benson responded to a report of a suspicious vehicle in the parking lot of 611 East Broadway Street on February 1st, shortly after 3 a.m. Upon arriving, he approached the driver's door of a parked white Oldsmobile Cutlass. It was being operated by 21-year-old Dayton Petrie of Omaha. Petrie refused to identify himself. Benson opened the door to try to get him out of the vehicle, and Petrie then shifted into reverse and accelerated backwards at a high rate of speed. Officer Benson was trapped between the open driver's door and the car body for approximately 40 feet. He was able to remain on his feet, though, and did fire two shots from his service weapon during the encounter. One round struck Petrie in the lower torso. After being shot, Petrie continued to flee, speeding off the property in the alley behind the business. He turned from the alley onto Frank Street, struck a power pole guide wire, which caused the vehicle to flip onto its roof. He crawled then out of the vehicle and tried to run away on foot before officers were able to track him down as they responded to help at the scene. No other weapons aside from the vehicle were located on Petrie. Officer Benson was not injured during the incident. There was a 59-year-old male subject in the passenger seat when that incident began. He tried to exit the vehicle as Petrie accelerated backward. He was trapped and dragged under the passenger door, and then his leg was run over by the vehicle. He refused medical attention at the scene and was subsequently interviewed and released. Petrie had a valid felony warrant for his arrest for parole violation out of Nebraska. He'll be booked into Douglas County Jail after he's out of the hospital. And Iowa DCI will be conducting a parallel investigation into the police personnel. And Council Bluffs detectives are conducting the criminal investigation regarding the actions of Petrie. And the Internal Affairs Unit will conduct an administrative review of the incident as well to ensure that all policies and procedures were followed. The Council Bluffs Police Department will be consulting with the county attorney of Pottawatomie County to get the charges for Petrie for his assault of the officer and his passenger, and additional arrest warrants will be coming next week. As the case remains open, the investigation, authorities said that they will not be releasing any video footage at this time. Any future public release of evidentiary material will be at the approval and direction of the county attorney. Officer Benson is on administrative leave while that investigation continues. In other local news, Atlantic police on Friday arrested 31-year-old Tony Mack of Atlantic. He was taken into custody on charges of domestic abuse assault, interference with official acts, and child endangerment. Mack was booked into the Cass County Jail. AMU General Manager Steve Jepkes reports that AMU has been notified that a number of customers have recently received phone calls from people indicating that they are with AMU and that the customer is past due and attempting to collect money from the customers over the phone or wire transfer. The caller indicates that service will be disconnected if they don't do so. AMU warns customers that this is not AMU calling. Similar scams have been made across the country and have occurred locally in the past. AMU, when contacting you, will state their name and that they are with the utility. They will not make you make a payment over the phone, and you will also be receiving a notice in the mail and at your residence posted if you are going to have service disconnected. They will only contact you during business hours, Monday through Friday from 7 to 4, and payments can only be accepted at their main office at 15 West 3rd Street. So anything of the contrary should be questioned. And if you do receive those calls, try to get as much information from those callers as you can and then contact AMU or local law enforcement. In other notes, an insurance company that had stopped accepting new Medicaid patients within Iowa's privatized health care program will soon resume enrollment. The Iowa Department of Human Services announced Friday that Amerigroup plans to accept new patients beginning in May. Patients will then have a choice between Amerigroup and United Healthcare, the other insurance company provided in coverage. Amerigroup also plans to provide coverage beginning in March for about 10,000 patients that are temporarily enrolled in the state's old Medicaid reimbursement system. Amerigroup said late last year it didn't have the capacity to accept new Medicaid patients, but they've made a change of heart after the third company, AmeriHealth Caritas, said they were leaving Iowa amid a contract dispute. DHS says it is responding to complaints over reduced services under the privatized Medicaid system. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit that claimed Iowa's privatized Medicaid program violated the rights of disabled patients. U.S. District Judge Rebecca Goodgame Ebinger made the decision Friday. She notes the main insurance company referenced in the lawsuit, AmeriHealth Caritas, stopped providing Medicaid coverage in the state late last year. Disability Rights Iowa filed the lawsuit last year on behalf of six people, claiming that the insurance companies running the health care program cut services to people with disabilities. It named Governor Kim Reynolds and DHS Director Jerry Foxhoven. Jane Hudson, Executive Director of Disability Rights Iowa, says in a statement that the organization is evaluating its next steps. She says the legislature should take action in the meantime. Another tax scam has surfaced, prompting alerts from the Iowa Department of Revenue and the IRS. It begins with cyber criminals stealing personal information, sometimes from computers of tax practitioners, and fraudulent returns in a few cases have used a taxpayer's real bank accounts for the deposit. And then a woman posing as a debt collection agency contacts the taxpayers to say that a refund was deposited in error and then asks them to forward the money to her. As a reminder, the Iowa Department of Revenue does not make those type of calls. If you feel you've been the victim of identity theft, you can report it to the Iowa Department of Revenue on a web form or by calling 515-281-5986. The Iowa Supreme Court has thrown out a Buchanan County man's indecent exposure conviction that was based on a photo sent via text message. Radio Iowa's Dar Danielson reports.
Jose Lopez was arrested in 2014 after he texted a picture of himself with an erection to a woman he wanted to date, but who had gotten a restraining order against him. He was convicted of the charge, but appealed, saying his attorney should have challenged the charge based on a lack of evidence. The Iowa Supreme Court ruling notes there is a difference between receiving an unwelcome sexually explicit image via text and having someone expose themselves in person. It says the text recipient can immediately close a message and choose not to reopen it or delete it. Well, the same can't be done if the exposure happens in person. The ruling says Iowa's indecent exposure law does not allow an adult to send a picture to a minor, but it does not make it illegal for an adult to send a picture of their genitals via text to another adult. The Supreme Court says Lopez's attorney should have challenged the evidence, and it reversed the indecent exposure conviction. Radio Iowa, I'm Dar Danielson.
In other state news, a Senate committee has approved legislation that would limit the liability for Iowa businesses accused of over-serving a customer involved in a drunk driving crash. If the bill becomes law, a person injured in a drunk driving wreck or the relatives of someone who dies in an accident would be limited to receiving a total of $175,000 from a bar or restaurant. Senator Michael Breitbach, a Republican from Strawberry Point, says the bill's needed because Iowa bar owners are finding it harder to buy liability insurance.
Especially in the western part of our area, in our rural areas, if you don't serve food with your beverages, there's only one company that will write your coverage.
And Breitbach grew up living on the floor above the Hub in Colesburg, his family's bar, and he says he doesn't want businesses like it to close because they can't find affordable liability coverage.
We have a lot of towns, a lot of small towns. Maybe the only business in their town is a local tavern. And maybe they don't serve enough food that they qualify for a better priced policy. We don't want that business to go away. It might be the backbone of that town.
Senator Nate Bolton, a Democrat from Des Moines, opposed the bill. He says the current law helps control risk.
And in many of these situations, the person that is in the best spot to stop an impaired driver is the one who stops that next drink from being served. And when we look at what this legislation does, it does tear down some of that responsibility.
Under current law, a bar or restaurant can be held liable for all damages from an accident if the person was sold or served alcohol and the business did know or should have known the person was intoxicated or was becoming too drunk to drive. A state report indicates the fleet of yellow buses owned by Iowa's public schools traveled more than 40 million miles last year. Some geographically large Iowa school districts are spending more than $900 a year for each student who rides the bus to and from school.
Some of the largest school districts in sort of the far-flung parts of the state are very expensive.
That's how Speaker Linda Upmeyer and other Republican lawmakers are offering to supplement some school transportation budgets, but in varying degrees. Republicans in the House are suggesting a $10 million boost for the coming year.
To the most needy districts across the state who are struggling with transportation, especially in a rural area.
That's Republican Representative Walt Rogers of Cedar Falls, chairman of the House Education Committee. A year ago, Senate Republicans signaled that they wanted to immediately send twice as much to schools for transporting kids to and from school. That plan eventually would have committed about $150 million a year in state money to supplement the budgets for busing in sprawling districts with rural zip codes. Senator Amy Sinclair, a Republican from Allerton, says given current state budget realities, she understands why her GOP colleagues in the House favor spending less on school transportation.
I prefer fixing problems rather than putting band-aids on them, but absolutely I'll work with them to see if we can get something done that at least will alleviate that stress and help every child receive a high-quality education.
Sinclair says another bill pending in the legislature could help ease school budgets for busing. The bill would let elementary students ride the bus just as long as high school students, a one-way trip of 75 minutes. One district told legislators with students of any age riding the same bus, two bus routes could be eliminated and save the district $100,000 next year. If you watch the big game, the Super Bowl on Sunday, you'll undoubtedly be paying more attention to the commercials. One of the spots will feature a really big Western Iowa bull. A 15-second Cinex spot features Albert the Bull, some actors, and some real Audubon residents. It's expected to air sometime around the third quarter, according to Brandon Toff, president of the Audubon Chamber of Commerce. The ad premiered locally during the Chamber's annual banquet auction and awards program on January 24th. Two representatives of Minnesota-based CHS Energy's advertising branch appeared at the banquet to show the clip. Those same two representatives purchased a 60-inch flat-screen TV from a local store to show the two videos and then turned around and donated it to the Chamber for their auction.
Not only was that the big centerpiece, but then they also donated $1,000 worth of Cenex gift cards on top of it, some of which we put on the silent auction and the bigger one we put on the live auction as well. So they just made a huge donation. And yeah, it was something we do every year. It's our chamber fundraiser so that we can help support the businesses around here.
The city was contacted late last summer about shooting the commercial on location. Albert, who is 53 years old and 28 feet tall, was showing his age, so the town reacted quickly to give him some much-needed TLC.
A group of us kind of got together to make sure Albert was looking dapper for the filming, and we got a grant and did a lot of work, repainted and got a new sign and did some things there for that.
The filming took place in mid-November. Toff said residents of Audubon County are excited to see the Cinex ad, which will make a play on the words Super Bowl and turn it into Super Bowl.
We're going to get more than our 15 seconds of fame. They put together just this really nice, it's about five-minute short documentary on Albert the Bull featuring some members of our community that were either around then or helped put them together or some of those things, some people that kind of everybody knows, and it's just really nicely done. You know, you see documentaries on other things, and you think, well, that doesn't look like it looks here, but when it's kind of made for TV, it was really professionally done and was just really neat to see.
The documentary is available on YouTube. You can find the link on this same story on our news page at KJN.com. And while the short version of the commercial that debuts on TV for viewers throughout the Midwest region features mostly actors, at the end there is a scene featuring members of the community standing in front of Albert. Toff was not present for that particular shot. He was busy with basketball that morning. That's a look at the latest in news. Now taking a look at your funeral announcements. Ronald Bamey, age 69, of Elkhorn, died Wednesday at the Salem Lutheran Home in Elkhorn. Funeral services for Ronald Bamey will be held today at 10 a.m. at the Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. Viola Ostaby, age 92, of Audubon, died Tuesday at Manning Regional Health Care Center. Funeral services for Viola Ostaby will be held Saturday at 10:30 a.m. at Trinity Church at the House Barn Heritage Park in Manning. Odie Funeral Home in Manning has arrangements. Myrna Nissen, age 79, of Atlantic, died January 27th at Pathfinder Place in Fremont, Nebraska. Funeral services for Myrna Nissen will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. Donald L. Fredrickson, age 80, of Exira, died January 27th at the Audubon County Memorial Hospital. Graveside services for Donald Fredrickson will be held today at 2 p.m. at the Exira Cemetery. Kessler Funeral Home Exira has arrangements. Joyce Hansen, age 73, of Atlantic, died Tuesday at Caring Acres in Oneida. Funeral services for Joyce Hansen will be held today at 3 p.m. at Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. Dolores Christensen, age 92, of Manila, died Wednesday at Jenny Edmondson Hospital in Council Bluffs. A visitation for Dolores Christensen will be held Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the OD Funeral Home in Manila. Arthur R. Lister, age 89, of Harlan, died Thursday. A graveside service and burial for Arthur Lister will be held Monday at 10:30 a.m. at the Clarinda Cemetery. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Richard Dick Neal, age 83, of Orient, died Tuesday at the Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown. Graveside services for Dick Neal will be held Tuesday at 11 a.m. at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter. Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield has arrangements. Joanne Catherine Rose, age 71, of Harlan, died Wednesday at Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Massive Christian burial for Joanne Catherine Rose will be held Tuesday at 11 a.m. at St. Michael's Catholic Church in Harlan. Polly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Kathleen Kathy Jones, age 61, of Cumberland, died Thursday at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. Funeral services for Kathy Jones will be held Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. at Zion Lutheran Church in Atlantic. Hockerberry Family Care Funeral Home Atlantic has arrangements. And Scott Robinson, age 77, of Manning, died Wednesday at his home in Arizona. Funeral services for Scott Robinson are pending at OD Funeral Home in Manning. That's a look at your latest DNN news and funeral announcements here on KJAN. I'm Chris Parks, KJAN News.